Chapter 12. Although Grissina hoped to get up before Haywood left the next morning, he was already gone when the touch of the sun's rays on her eyelids woke her. Grissina had meant to repair her shelter and sleep there, but nightfall had taken her by surprise, and she hadn't done more than clean out some of the mud before it was too dark to see. The boy had let her sleep under his lean-to again while he slept at the opposite end. Grissina appreciated that, after that one meaningful glance, he never again referred to the deplorable condition of the shelter she'd built. Even so, she was well aware of how few things she'd actually accomplished since she'd arrived in the swamp, and how bleak her future looked. It was almost enough to make her want to pull the blanket over her head and never come out from under it.
"Are you going to eat this egg or what?"
asked Pippa. The little snake was curled beside an egg that had been carefully placed just beyond the lean-to.
"That boy boiled it in his pot and left it for you. I prefer them raw, but I'm willing to give it a try if you don't want it. We could call it my good luck and..."
"I'll eat it," Grissina said, reaching for the egg. "Who knows when I'll get something else? Finding food has been harder than I thought it would be. And don't you dare tell me it's because I have bad luck. Sometimes luck has nothing to do with what happens."
Said Pippa. "So, tell me, why do you suppose the boy takes that box with him when he leaves? Maybe it's a deep, dark secret. Maybe he keeps the finger bones of a murderer in it. Or maybe they are love notes from a jilted mermaid, or a horde of deadly spiders trained to jump up and bite you on the nose when you least expect it."
"That's a horrible thought," said Grissina. "Where do you get such ideas?" Pippa coiled herself on Grissina's knee and rested her head on her tail.
"I didn't make them up. They were part of a spell Madine used once."
"So why do you suppose Haywood takes the box with him?" asked Grissina.
"Either he takes it because he needs something that's in it, or so someone, maybe you, can't see what's inside."
"I wonder which it was."
"My guess is," said Pippa, "it's probably both. Say, are you going to eat the rest of that egg? Because if you're not..."
"I'm eating it, see?" Grissina took her second bite. Pippa eyed a bird's nest at the top of a plum tree.
"Then I suppose I have to go get my own food. I feel a sudden yearning for fresh eggs. So, if you'll excuse me..."
Grissina finished the egg while following the path off the island. It had occurred to her that the fairy might have left the swamp on some sort of errand, but she wasn't ready to give up yet. However, she was beginning to wonder just what she would say if she found the fairy. Should she ask for a place to live? A new family, perhaps? But even that wouldn't work. The only family she really wanted was the one she'd had. Then a thought occurred to her that was so stupendous that she gasped and almost forgot to start breathing again. Maybe she could ask the fairy to use her magic to remove the curse from the queen and put everything back the way it had been. Then her father would be alive, and Chartreuse wouldn't hate her, and... how strong was fairy magic, anyway? Having started the day feeling dispirited, Grissina now had a spring in her step and a new purpose to her search. Finding the fairy could change not only her life, but that of her entire family. All she knew about the family curse was what her father had told her, so maybe it wouldn't be too hard to end. "Swamp fairy!" called Grissina as she waded through the tall grass beside the bottomless pit. "Oh, swamp fairy!" she shouted across the river where the otters made their home. "Are you there, swamp fairy?" she wailed. Although she searched high and low for the swamp fairy, Grissina never saw any evidence that the fairy was around. She was on her way back when she passed another patch of weeds burned to a crunchy black, a patch that had been lush and green the day before. Grissina shrugged and continued on, once again certain that she had nothing to fear. It was probably just a baby dragon, although she had yet to see or hear one. It was late in the day when Grissina returned to the island and found Haywood there with dinner waiting. This time he'd found enough meat and edible roots to make a stew. Grissina had found a handful of scraggly wild onions. "How did you find all this food?" she asked as she accepted a hollowed-out gourd filled with stew. "Magic," Haywood said with a wink. Grissina shrugged. "So don't tell me." She wasn't about to pester him into telling her, not when she already planned to find out for herself. "But I have another question for you. I've been finding burn spots like a baby dragon might make, and I found werewolf prints near the Enchanted Forest, but that was before I came here to live. Have you seen any sign of either one? Haywood bent over the pot on the fire, stirring the little bit of stew that remained. "Can't say that I have," he said, without looking up. "Good," said Grisina. "Just let me know if you do." Once again, Grisina was too tired to work on her shelter, but this time she had another reason to go to bed early. While Haywood was banking the fire for the night, she found Pippa soaking up the last bit of heat from a sun-warmed rock on the other side of the island. "Would you wake me before Haywood leaves tomorrow morning?" she asked the snake. "You could get me up when you get up."
"If you really want me to," said Pippa.
"I do," Grisina said. "We have to be quiet about it. I want to follow him without him knowing it."
"I get it. You want to spy on him. And you should, too. I bet there's something he isn't telling you that you really should know."
The little snake reared her head.
"Maybe your mother sent him to spy on you."
"He was here before I was, remember? He couldn't have been sent to spy on me before I even decided to come here."
"Well, there is that," said the snake.
"Did you say something?" Haywood asked, coming up behind her. Pippa slithered off into the tall grass as Grisina turned to face him.
"No, I was just talking to myself."
"You do that a lot."
"I do not."
"Yes, you do. I've seen you when you didn't know I was looking. You do it all the time."
"You do spy on me."
Haywood blushed and looked away. "I wouldn't call it spying. I just like to look at you. I think you're beautiful." Grisina felt heat creep up her neck and across her cheeks.
"People usually call my sister beautiful, not me. Please don't say things you don't mean."
"I don't," Haywood said, shaking his head vehemently. "I think you're the most beautiful girl I've ever seen."
"Then I thank you for the compliment,"
Grisina said, feeling her cheeks flame. Although her father had often told her that she was pretty, no one else ever had. She had always assumed that her father had said it because he was her father. A bat darted between them, catching an insect, then zigzagging away. "It's getting dark," Haywood said into the uncomfortable silence. Grisina nodded and turned toward the lean-to. She was suddenly aware of him in a way she hadn't been before. The feeling stayed with her as she wrapped herself in her now dry blanket under the lean-to and closed her eyes. Haywood was good-looking in a sweet and wholesome way. His tousled brown hair was getting lighter from the sun and was now the color of drying hay. His eyes, so angry at first, were friendly, and the crinkles in the corners made him seem that much nicer. She had believed him when he said he was telling the truth, simply because she didn't think he was capable of lying. Tired as she was, it took her a long time to fall asleep that night. It was still dark out when Grisina felt something brush her cheek. The feather-light touch came again, and she opened her eyes. In the radiance of the nearly full moon, she could just make out Pippa's slight form only inches away, flicking her tongue at her. Startled, Grisina jerked her head back, thumping it on one of the support posts.
"You said you wanted me to wake you," said the snake.
Grisina cleared her throat, careful to be quiet so she wouldn't wake Haywood.
"Thanks," she said. "What time is it anyway?"
"I'm a snake. Do you really think I can tell time? That last mole I ate didn't agree with me. I've had indigestion ever since I swallowed it. I think it must have gone bad. Well-behaved moles never give me problems like this."
Grisina glanced up at the moon to check its position in the sky.
"Will you look at that? It can't be later than 5 o'clock. I wonder why Haywood gets up so early."
"He doesn't. I did because my stomach hurts. Can I help it if I couldn't sleep any longer? You said you wanted me to wake you when I got up. That boy will probably sleep for a while yet."
"What am I supposed to do in the meantime?"
"Go back to sleep?
Will you wake me again?"
"Why? Wasn't once enough for you?" "Now that I'm awake, I have things to do. Nests to raid, mice to catch. Maybe a nice tender mouseling will make my stomach feel better."
"If I go back to sleep, I'll probably miss him again."
"You probably will, the way your luck is going now. I guess you should stay awake,"
said the snake, and she disappeared into the underbrush. Squirming around so that she was almost sitting, Grisina propped herself on her elbows. She couldn't sit up all the way because it wouldn't do for Haywood to wake and see that she was awake as well, not if she wanted to keep it a secret. Something plopped into the water just beyond the last plum tree. A tiny creature squeaked in the grasp of a night predator. Grisina pulled the blanket up to her chin and watched the stars through the shifting branches overhead. She thought about the tapestry that had hung on the wall of her mother's chamber for as long as she could remember. The tapestry had shown her mother as a young woman standing on one of the castle's towers. It was night, and the stars were actually twinkling, just like the ones in the sky were now. Her mother had called it the Green Witch Tapestry, and said that she had received it when she became the Green Witch. She never would tell Grisina any details, just that it had appeared in her room the night her own mother had died. The tapestry had disappeared when the curse changed Olivine, and no one had seen it since. Grisina was still thinking about the tapestry when she heard Haywood begin to stir. She remained motionless while he crawled out from under the lean-to and made soft noises by the fire pit. When she finally opened her eyes, he wasn't on the path she always took. He was going in the opposite direction on a path she hadn't known existed and had the wooden chest tucked under his arm. Watching from among the plum trees, Grisina saw him follow a convoluted set of twists and turns. She couldn't understand how he knew where to place his feet with such apparent confidence until she reached the head of the path. Two parallel rows of fireflies sat facing each other across a span of a foot or so on what she would have sworn was quicksand, lighting the way in an on-again, off-again pattern. If she hadn't seen Haywood place his feet exactly there, she never would have thought it safe enough to try. Grisina's steps were tentative at first, but when she found firm ground beneath the top layer of mud and water, she began to walk with more confidence. The sun rose, banishing the fireflies and replacing them with thick-bodied black beetles lined up like dots of ink splattered across one of her father's parchments. When the water-laden sand thickened around her like curdled milk, supporting straggly plants and not much else on its more solid-looking clumps, bright yellow butterflies fanned their wings on the only tufts that could hold her weight. Grisina glanced up to see Haywood step onto dry land and hurry around a group of blue-green-leaved shrubs. She took the last few steps faster than was prudent, and her foot slipped into the water, making her half-fall, half-jump to solid ground. Bunching the fabric of her skirt in her fists, she ran after Haywood, convinced that she knew his secret. It took her a few minutes to find him again, as tall grass concealed where he knelt beside one of the larger ponds. A fat, silver-sided fish lay gasping at his feet, and another leaped out of the water as she watched. "So that's it," she said, pointing an accusing finger at him. "You can do magic." Haywood turned to look at her, his face a study of flickering emotions. "How did you get here?" he asked. "I thought you were asleep." "I wanted to see where you went," Grisina said. "I never guessed." "So now you know," he said, his voice sounding stiff and wooden. "I suppose this means I'll never see you again."
"Why do you say that?"
Haywood shrugged. "If you're like any of the girls I used to know, you'll be afraid of me. If you're like my father, you'll threaten to have me locked up for the rest of my miserable life." Grisina was horrified.
"Is that why you ran away? And they acted like that just because you can do magic? I can't see how anyone who knew you would ever think that you would hurt anyone. And to say that you..."
An incredulous look crept across Haywood's face. "You mean you aren't afraid of me? I thought you, of all people, would... I mean, with a mother like yours."
"You know who my mother is?"
"I know she's a witch who threatened to turn you into things if you didn't do what she wanted. That's enough to make anyone afraid of magic."
"How do you know she did that? I never mentioned anything about it."
"I told you. I've heard you talking to yourself. I've been living in the swamp for a few weeks now. The first time I saw you, you were holding a toad. I heard you say that you needed a toad with 7 warts for your mother. And then you came looking for blackbird eggshells. Both times you talked about what your mother would do if you didn't bring her what she wanted." Grisina's hand flew to her heart.
"It was you, wasn't it? You're the one who helped me, not the swamp fairy. I saw what you could do with insects and fish.
I suppose the toads and birds wouldn't be very different. Heywood shrugged and shifted the wooden box to his other arm. I can do only simple magic, the most basic kind that even the least gifted fey can do, like turn flax into gold and make ants separate peas from lentils. I've tried to do more involved spells, but I can get them to work only part way before they fizzle out. So far, I haven't been able to control any animal bigger than a cat.
At least you can do some kind of magic, said Grisina. Even small magic is better than nothing.
Small magic, huh? I suppose that's an appropriate name for it. I haven't given up on doing the bigger magic, though. I was trying to come up with a bigger, better spell when my sister and her friend walked in on me. I lost my concentration, and there was an accident that set the stable on fire. They couldn't wait to tell my father their version of what had happened. He never gave me a chance to explain.
But I thought people respected magic users.
The Green Witch is well respected, I know. And because of her, so are most of the women who do magic. But men are different. How often do you hear about a good wizard? They're out there, but it's very rare to hear about the good they've done. People would rather talk about the ones who misuse their magic, which makes it seem as if they all do.
You're a good person. Surely your father could see...
My father didn't know me well enough to see anything. I was the fifth of seven brothers and three sisters, and had never been his favorite, probably because I didn't fit into his plans. Unlike my brothers, I didn't want to be a knight or a member of the clergy. I practiced with the sword and lance when Father demanded it, but everyone knew I preferred my books. My mother had given me an illustrated bestiary shortly before she died birthing my youngest sister. The book showed every magical creature known to man. I thought they were fascinating and spent all my spare time learning everything I could about magical beasts. When my father found out, he took my books away and ordered me to practice swordplay with my brothers. I disarmed the two eldest, which seemed to anger the rest. Father didn't say a word when they all took me on at once, fresh and eager to fight, while I was too tired to hold up my sword.
That's awful, said Grisina.
Heywood shrugged. It wasn't that unusual in our family. My father often turned a blind eye when it suited him. Last year, I discovered that I had some small talent for magic, so I went off by myself whenever I could, hoping that I'd become good enough to make him proud of me. But it was already easy for him to think the worst of me, so he believed my sister when she accused me of purposefully setting the stable on fire. You have known me only a short time, yet you've seen me more clearly than he ever did.
Weren't you able to save any of your books? Oh, said Grisina. Is that what you keep inside that wooden box? You take it with you everywhere you go, but I've never seen you open it. Is it the book your mother gave you? If it is, I'd love to see it. I think that book sounds fascinating.
Heywood glanced down at the box. It's not a book. It's something else. Something too dangerous to open when anyone else is around. I keep it with me in case of an emergency, and so no one will try to open it and get hurt. Now, I have a question for you. I know you have a pet snake. Don't deny it, he said when Grisina opened her mouth to speak. It's left trails all over the island, and I've seen you wearing it on your wrist like a bracelet. Why do you keep a snake like that? You're the first girl I've ever met who actually likes snakes.
I don't like all snakes, just Pippa, said Grisina. I met her after my mother turned me into a rabbit. Pippa's not a pet, either. She's more of a friend.
I'd introduce you to her now, but she's hunting back on the island.
Good, said Heywood. There were too many mice there before you came. They were nibbling holes and everything, and I couldn't keep food from one day to the next. Thank you, said Grisina.
For what? I should be the one thanking you. You brought the snake.
Grisina shook her head. Thank you for helping me when no one else would. I hate to think what I'd be doing now if I'd stayed with my mother and sister.
In that case, you're welcome, said Heywood. Although, to tell the truth, having you here has been the best thing that ever happened to me.